Hi, folks. Me again. Thanks for being here. I wanted to do a short follow-up video on the Nine Consciousnesses video I uploaded a week or two ago. Because it struck me this morning as I thought about responding to a recent email question. Once again, about how does daimoku, how does chanting actually change karma? What actually happens there? And obviously, in the Nine Consciousnesses video, I go through that as kind of a condensed version, because the question really goes back to that playlist, that whole series of videos I did on the 3,000 Realms, the Origins of Life. But I'm concerned that we still don't have a firm grasp of what is meant in Buddhism by the word attachment. And I have a video on attachment as well. And just as a reminder, you can go to that, not at the top of the video, but on my channel, when you go to the homepage, there's all of us, if you have a channel on YouTube, whenever you go to a channel's homepage, there's a strip menu about a third of the way down, just under the image, that has things like about and videos and playlists and that kind of thing. And depending on your computer and the size of your image on the computer, off to the right, your right, there'll be a little magnifying glass, a search icon. You might have to scroll to get to it, but you can use that search to search the page, or sort of the website, if you will. But that page, you can put a term in there like Nine Consciousnesses or attachments, and it'll pull up a search from the videos of any videos that have that subject matter. So if you're wanting to learn more about karma, what does karma mean? You can put that in the search field, and all the videos that have either karma in the title or in the description, they'll show up. And so that can be a helpful research tool for you. So use that. Now, all I wanted to say in this video that occurred to me during the night was the nature of attachment that we generally think of when we talk Buddhism or whatever in secular life. We think of attachment as a conscious choice, right? Some of you are probably saying, duh, right? And that's the way we think about attachment. So when we're told, you know, we have attachment to things, we think, yeah, I need to change my mind. But actually, this is very critical to understand, to really get the nature of what we're doing when we invoke Buddha, when we namu myoho renge kyo. What are we doing when we chant? What is happening under the hood? Because certainly when we chant to Mandala Gohonzon, we have all of these focused distractions, if you will. That seems like an oxymoron, but in the scope of how we practice, I hope you understand that the mandala, the sounding out, the repetition, the thinking about the pronunciation, the vibratory breathing, every aspect of chanting with a focal point is all to take our samsaric conditioning of human and distract the monkeys, give the monkeys something to do, look over here, and the monkeys looking, and then while they're looking, you're invoking, and you're vibrating, and you're breathing, and you're looking, and you're hearing, myoho renge kyo. That's why, that's the mechanism of all this that Nichiren provided for us to simply awaken our Buddha nature. And so these are all tools. When we invoke Buddha, while the rest of our human attached mind is busy trying to understand what we're doing, then it lessens getting in our way of our consciousness, our Amala consciousness, the Buddha consciousness, right? So, attachment. We have a little more difficult time understanding craving. Craving, we say, well, that's attachment. But again, our human condition says attachment is, I got you, right? But what I want you to think about now is the way if you spill acid on your skin, why does it burn? Because the molecules, the atoms of that acid are unbalanced. Like an acid is, I may get this backwards now, but an acid is oxygen hungry or hydrogen hungry. Anyway, it's an atom that desperately wants another atom attached to it to relax. This atom's out of balance. So think chemistry. Those atoms, when they hit your skin, find a source of these other atoms. Let's just say it's hydrogen heavy, so it wants oxygen to make water. But in order to, and you think, well, water, why does that burn? Because it's pulling the oxygen molecules out of our skin so that it can balance. But in so doing, it strips our skin of its balance and creates, you know, an alkaline does the same thing only the other way around, right? It's hydrogen hungry, one or the other. Anyway, that what my point is that atomically, atoms are attracted to one another for different reasons to make balance. And the balance is what we know as a molecule, right? There are H2O is two hydrogen atoms with one oxygen atom, and they together they make water, a very stable molecule. You take one of those molecule or atoms away from the mix, an H1O2 or an H2O5, you unbalance that molecule, then it wants to seek balance. Okay, think of that as craving. These molecules seeking balance are inexorably looking for this connection of shared electrons that balances them out, makes a stable molecule. See, that craving isn't your decision. That craving is part and parcel of the makeup atomically of the universe. And it has to do with the bonds of those molecules. Now, I don't want to get too deep into chemistry here, but, valent bonds, covalent bonds, all of this. There's an energy that bonds these electrons, protons, neutrons into atoms and then into molecules. That energy, that action of combination, which precipitates all of life, if you go to the nth degree, all the way to quantum, where things are, you could say, impose our humanity on it, are attracted to one another, but it's not an attraction that's conscious, it's an attraction that's built into that combinatory energy of things. Now, when the water molecule becomes stable, you could say that it's attached. We would use that kind of language when discussing chemistry, right? So understand, in Buddhism, When we say that we have attachments in life, we're not talking about the conscious decision to buy this television monitor, this laptop, or this stereo system, or this car, or have this boyfriend or girlfriend, or those are conscious, they're attachments, yes, but the attachment, the craving that we talk about in Buddhism is this fundamental samsaric activity. And now you could say, well, how the hell can I control that? That's just happening. That's the reason my blood flows, right? I'm attached to my heart, right? I mean, you could throw up your hands and go, well, how can you do anything about that? But this is the point. That when we chant those layers of consciousness I'm talking about, from and I'll put a link to the earlier video if you haven't seen it yet. Start there, because this is drilling down now, but I want you to understand that when you chant Daimoku, when you invoke your Buddha, especially with the help of a mandala and an altar and everything that you do to ritualize this behavior so that you can deeply focus single-mindedly, fusing with Buddha, what you're actually doing is transcending these consciousnesses of sight, hearing, taste, touch, emotion, all of that. You're piercing right through them to the very nature of the formations of those attachments. The formations of a water molecule between the hydrogen and the oxygen. That's what you're touching. Well beyond what your human conscious thinking mind is really just responding to. So we talk about addictions. I'm flying back and forth here. But when we talk about addictions, we talk about behaviors that we just are emotionally attached to. But that's not what we're talking about here in Buddhism, because those emotions come from attachments. The idea that you can't stop doing something, as nonsensical as that is a human mundane decision, but it's a decision based on some energy in your karma, and that karma is built of those. Think of it as chemistry, if you will, biochemistry. Those bonds that are made at that fundamental level, that constituent level of samsaric thingness, which includes atoms, right? And subatoms, protons, neutrons, quarks. It's all about bonds. In chemistry, we call them bonds. The strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, the so on and so forth. I found chemistry very fascinating from this standpoint. You don't have to become a chemist, but I'm saying you need to understand the vocabulary of Buddhism being about the cessation of the formations, not your emotional attachment to stuff. Sure, that's problematic, but that's way down the road from what we're talking about. The very fact that you're attracted to redheads isn't the problem. That's just your humanness, your human being. But it derives from much more fundamental forces within the creation of you in each and every moment, that inertia, that momentum of life that you are, is constructed from very, very discrete things. And so when you know, Shakyamuni taught slowly more and more complex thinking to get you to, and now today we all have this ability to think that kind of dissection of minute discrete things occurring in our bodies, in our minds, in our world. Whereas, you know, 1,000 years ago, that concept was really, really foreign. Right? We now live in the latter day, and the latter day of the law is simply an evolution of humanity that has come to understand the physical universe at such a level that when we talk about Buddhism, we can super drill down to what it is that Shakyamuni discovered. Buddhism. That fundamentally, if we can approach and satiate those bonds, those attachments, it's almost not the right word, isn't it? They're bonds. They're biochemical bonds. And what creates the biochemical bonds? Further reduced bonding. You know, where does that come from? Well, that's what the Nidana is about. Shakyamuni realized all of this 3,000 years ago. How amazing is that? But that's the gift of the Buddha eye, if you will. The vision from there of how all of this works. Detached. Follow? Try to wrap your head around that. Try to think of, more importantly, it may be very simple for you to go, wow, I get that, at however you do. But keep that in mind when you're reading and studying and listening about the Buddhism that we practice, and apply that to the verbiage that's used. Again, language is a barrier, right? So if we read that language with the words like formations, and we think at an atomic level, ceasing formations, craving, attachments, obstacles, karma, energy at an atomic level is what you and I express through this very complicated vessel that supports our consciousnesses. And because it supports that complexity of thought, we can use it on itself. And that is what we do when we chant to Gohanzon, which is an energetic aspect of our fundamental forces. I hope that helps you understand. And this is how, then, if you understand that, then you can think of chanting as piercing through these levels built on one another of the Nidana. And as you pierce through them, you don't destroy them, but you align your conscious will, your motive force, your kinetic energy with alleviating the craving of those forces having to combine, and further you influence those same forces to align in a life-affirming way. You let them be without being enforcing their bonding. You let the atoms do what they need to do, but rather than being bound to their limitations, you can influence them as supporting your enlightened, your awakened, your life-affirming bonds, and you can break the bonds of those things that are negative, that cause you suffering, emotion, and the craving becomes less manifesting and more observational. So it lessens the first thing that happens as you pierce to the Amala consciousness, going through the other consciousnesses. Take vision, for example. Your vision consciousness is a very right there. That's like a surface experience. And if you use this mandala, you can rein in that experience so that it isn't every distraction in the room. This is why it's important to enshrine your Gohonzon in such a way that it is the only focus on that wall. Because if you don't, your little vision monkeys will go, look at that. I remember that ribbon. Oh, that poster. I always thought that was cool. Your monkey eye consciousness will be going everywhere. So if you take everything away and you light this mandala clearly, and you focus your eyes on the myo character so that you're further focused right in it, in Namu Myo Rengekyo, your vision consciousness is now being trained on your Buddha. And as you chant, you are taking what would be distractions, what your eyes wanting to dart around, and you'll catch them. Look here, look here, look here, look here, is what you're doing. And that's realigning those bonds so that the distraction bonds that karma of yours always has starts to shift. It still exists. It just starts to be retrained to look for Buddha in everything with your vision conscious. Same thing with your oral consciousness. You're speaking orally and you're listening orally. Those are consciousnesses. So I don't want them to hear the TV blaring MTV or news or whatever. Your ears are going, I'm chanting, what's that? What's going on? Oh, that lady got caught. Oh, right? Oh, I love that song. Those are monkeys. They just want to grab on, craving. So as we chant orally, we listen. Namo Myoho Rengekyo, Namo Myoho Rengekyo. Wow. Now my ear attachments. I'm looking at I'm preceding the formations of hearing and I'm training them. Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. And so I start to hear differently. Physically, I feel my daimoku. I feel my breathing, but I feel the vibration with that steady namu myo rengekyo, namu myo. And I feel it in my body. And I feel less and less the conditions of the room. Do you see how chanting, especially focused with the mandala, is a way to reach our Amala consciousness, and in doing so, using all these other consciousnesses and bringing them to attention to Buddha, to the source, to the fundament. So that as we chant, our life becomes stronger, our positive life, our problem-solving life, our observation of life, becomes more and more what our human mind comes to seek, experience, and influence. Not every bond of every atom in our bodies is easily influenced. But you're guaranteed, if you look and focus yourself on this mandala, and dedicate yourself single-mindedly to fuse with Buddha at that subcellular level, you are guaranteed to experience Buddha, at least at some level. And after a good 30 minutes, hour of that, you're going to walk away with a different awareness of your environment. You're going to feel differently. You're going to see differently. the nature of how you interact with your life, your environment, which is your life, is going to be shifted. You're slowly training every single cell, atom, molecule, energy in your momentum, in your kinetic life. And you'll move the ball a little bit toward your Buddhahood, your Bodhisattva. Buddhahood is in the mind. Bodhisattva is your human manifestation acting in concert with raising this Buddha mind. All right. Yet another way of conveying this practice. I hope that helps. Again, this was meant to be a short add-on video. I don't think I explored that concept enough in the last one. And, you know, I explore it ad nauseum in the playlist of the 3,000 Realms, the Origins of Life. But again, it's hard with words to describe what this practice is meant to achieve, how it works, right? I hope that helps. I'll leave a link. If not, if I can't figure out how to put a card up here so where you can see it, certainly in the description I'll have a link to that 9 consciousnesses. And I guess I should also put a link to the playlist for the 3,000 Realms in there. Again, use the search feature. It's really helpful. There's a lot of videos on this channel, so it's hard to slog through them all. But with a search term, you can really focus in your search. And until the next one, we'll get back to the Go Show here. I just wanted to say hi, proud of your practice, and very thankful for your participation. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Have a great one.